I agree with you completely. It is great evidence. I think they might be skeptical on how the government obtains the wiretap evidence. The evidence themselves, I think, it speaks for itself and it's very strong. It's as good evidence as you're going to get. However, I think sometimes they're skeptical.
Yeah. To that point, Mr. Speaker, what specifically was the criticism of government conduct, though, that you felt you would be responding to? What you alluded to it before.
Certainly. It was sort of an overall. We had introduced an admission that one of the defendants made. There was questioning why wasn't that tape recorded?
What an opening statement?
That was when that evidence was put in. But I can see where you're going. There was no specific criticism of the government getting a wiretap in this case. The criticism was
because if this is approved, I suppose. All seven U.S. attorneys in the circuit would say, gee, not a bad thing to take a few minutes and pile on here, right?
Well, put
in your Sunday school record and attendance and graduated from law school and ranking.
Certainly, I think at one point the amount of evidence would be sort of overkill. And I guess what I'm trying to look for is sort of a comfortable balance. And I would submit to you that's what I did in this case. Yes, there is an application process. Yes, we followed it. Boom, move on. Not admitting, for instance, the entire application, the affidavits, the court orders, those type of things, and saying, look, it's these defendants on the court orders. Let me also point out...
There are different ways you can do that, I suppose. If you merely said... The question would be, did you follow proper procedure in obtaining the Title III warrant? The answer is yes.
Yes.
Doesn't that do it, too?
That would do it as well.
We don't need all the vouching you had probable cause and all that.
I hear that suggestion. I'll probably follow that path in the future. Let me move on to the issue of self-representation. I think... the issue here with regards to Mr. Williams was what was the purpose of him requesting self-representation. Judge Barker found that it was for the purpose of delay. It was a factual finding, which I believe should be reviewed for abuse of discretion. I think the record clearly supports that factual finding. Mr. Williams had... an appointed counsel, the same appointed counsel, for approximately 12 months prior to the morning of trial. He appeared...
But if he asked 2 weeks ahead of time, why isn't that plenty of notice?
The notice, even if he asks on the day of trial, I think that's fine. The question is, what is his purpose for asking? If he asked 2 weeks before trial, basically trying to delay the trial, I think... If a judge finds, look, you're not...
But how can he delay the trial when he asks 2 weeks in advance?
If that's his purpose, to delay the trial.
I don't understand. How can he delay it? Well, how could that be a purpose?
Well, the way he was trying to do it in the record was he was saying, look, I haven't reviewed all these transcripts. And his lawyer said, well, yeah, I've reviewed them. And he says, well, I need more time to review them. And Judge Barker said, well, here's how we're going to give you time to review these things. Is your lawyer ready for trial? He says, I'm ready for trial. This is right because he was asking for a continuance along with his request for self-representation.
Well, sure, but she can turn down the continuance and I thought she warned him about his not being prepared. And he said, I want to do it anyway.
I think
by that time... He knew that he wasn't going to. There wasn't going to be a delay.
It was
going to start on schedule.
But he had sort of, at least in my opinion, tried or attempted to put Judge Barker in a trick bag by saying, "Look, I'm unprepared to go to trial. I don't know what is going on, but I want to go forward and represent myself."
Then I don't see the trick because all she says to him is, "You're not prepared," and it puts you at a big disadvantage. But you know, it's your right if you want to. Go to trial unprepared. You're mentally competent, so that's your right.
That's right.
Isn't that basically what the situation is?
It's sort of that situation, but what he was attempting to do, I mean, the question is it a sincere invocation of your right to self-representation, or is an attempt to delay the trial. And you can ask to represent yourself on the day of trial if the basis for that request is sincerely, I want to represent myself. But what she found, and I think what the record supports, is that his purpose was not that he really wanted to represent himself. His purpose was, I want to delay this trial. I want to put this off. And I think that's what the record in front of Judge Barker supported.
Why? What is the basis for that? Just the fact that he waited until 2 weeks before trial?
Actually, he asked for the boarding of the trial as the jury was standing outside. But the timing of it, the first
but
thing
he... hadn't he 2 weeks earlier asked to represent himself?
He had never asked to represent himself until the morning of trial, Your Honor.
The jury was just ready to come into the court.
They were literally outside the door. I believe it's in the record that Judge Barker says, you know, hold the jury at the door. And it's interesting. I think if you in the transcript when Mr. she
what
says
what was Ms. Schneider talking about what happened 2 weeks earlier?
I don't think she said anything about 2 weeks earlier.
I think it may have been a hypothetical.
I think it might have been a hypothetical.
Oh, okay. He
did it on the day of trial.
Okay. Right. Sorry.
And the final issue, I'll address quickly, regarding the bifurcated trial. I think bifurcated trials are useful in their when there are issues extraneous to guilt. Certainly, I would have been fairly happy not to have to prove all the sentencing factors to the jury, but I, of course, thought that was the law at that time. In this case, there was no evidence that was extraneous to the issue of guilt. It wasn't like a felon in possession case or where you would bifurcate the trial to prove whether or not the defendant was actually a felon. It was not like a legal reentry case with regard to whether the defendant had previously been convicted of an aggravated felony. The only issues that were at sentencing would have been issues at this trial, that is, the quantity of drugs, whether the defendants possessed firearms, what their role was in the offense, whether one of the individuals was pregnant, and whether this activity took place within 1,000 feet of a school. So I think, hindsight being perfect, we would have just left this up to Judge Barker to determine at sentencing. But we believe that there was no prejudice from not bifurcating this trial, considering the weight of the evidence. Thank you very much.
Okay, just thank you.
Before you sit down.
One second.
Yes.
I don't see where she's made a finding anywhere that he was trying to delay the trial.
I'll find it for you in a second.
She keeps saying he seems frustrated. I don't want you to shoot yourself in the foot because
is that part of
this? On page 1257 of the transcript, and this is, I believe, which Ms. Schneider mentioned, she didn't say this until later in the trial, which
is
accurate.
This is her supplement.
Supplement to the initial ruling. Williams point blank asked her why he had not been allowed to represent himself at the beginning of trial, and she said was not sincere. His request was not sincere, but a delaying tactic that you pursued because you were frustrated by my immediately prior ruling not to give you the trial, to give you additional time for discovery. So she did find that he was. His purpose, at least, in asking for the to represent himself was a delaying tactic, and the purpose was that he was trying to delay. And then later, of course, at page 1330, she goes in when she talks about she observed the individual in the back of the gallery and said, this goes to support my view on the part of Mr. Williams' behavior yesterday and at the beginning of trial was posturing by him, that it was an intent to delay or disrupt the proceedings and not a genuine and sincere as involuntary and knowing invocation of his constitutional rights.
Well, she didn't say it at the beginning.
She did not say it at the beginning. That's clear Your Honor, and my own, this is, of course, speculation on my part, a jury outside the door. She's thinking, let's move on, and I'll tackle this and supplement my findings later, which I don't believe there's any prohibition of her coming back and saying, and this is why I didn't let you represent yourself on the day of trial, because I thought you were intending to delay the trial. Thank you.
That was also made as a response to a question asked by...
Yes, it was. It was. But she was in the process of basically making a very lengthy finding and ruling on this. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Marsh, are you taking the time, or how is...
Mr. Scherr.
Mr. Scherr is going to do it. All right.
Mike Scherr, appearing on behalf of Mr. Cunningham, and I only intend to take a couple of minutes of the court's time and then leave the balance of the rebuttal time to Ms. Schneider. I would just like to respond briefly to the court's questions regarding the Title III issue. I think that argument is based on a fundamental, incontestable proposition of law, and that is questions of law are to be decided by the court. Questions of fact in criminal cases like this are to be decided by the jury. And the question of law in this case regarding the legality of the Title III warrant was, in fact, addressed by the court, as has already been elicited, prior to trial based on the defendant's proper motion to suppress evidence. That battle was fought. That battle was lost. The motion was denied. And after that, the legality of the search of and the legality of the warrant and the legality of the interception of those conversations had nothing whatsoever to do with the trial. Why the evidence came into the courtroom is not a concern for the jury. The jury's concern is to determine guilt or innocence. And the special agent's testimony regarding the history and the process behind the warrant had nothing at all to do with this case. And we've cited a number of cases in our brief going back to the Simmons case from the early 50s in the District of Columbia. This is not a controversial proposition. Now, with respect to my client, Mr. Cunningham, who is now serving a life sentence, I would like to respond to some of the comments regarding the evidence. Mr. Cunningham's conviction is based on the evidence of one co-defendant who struck a plea bargain with the government. That is the only direct evidence linking Mr. Cunningham to this conspiracy. Mr. Cunningham was not charged with or convicted of possession or distribution. He was charged only in count one, which is the conspiracy count. And so the government had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Cunningham had knowingly joined this conspiracy. I respectfully submit in the context of this case, on this record, given the paucity of evidence with respect to Mr. Cunningham, this testimony of Special Agent Dooley regarding the warrant process could have been sufficient to convince the jury to conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Cunningham was guilty of the conspiracy charged in count one. Absent that conspiracy, it might well have been a different outcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schneider.
Thank you. I'd like to just clear up a few points. When we say that a jury was outside the door, that is the jury panel. The jury had not yet been... selected at the time Mr. Williams made his request.
But it is true we had nearly a year, and this is truly an 11th hour inquiry. I'm not to the point of whether he could or should have at that point, but in the scheme of things, it came about as late as it can come, right?
It came as late as it could come and still be timely, yes.
I understand.
So yes. Now,
the judge spoke about irritated and frustrated.
Yes.
Now, could and did not speak about delay. Would it be an unfair reading to suggest that maybe at that point Judge Barker was speaking to capacity? You know, Johnson, a judge doesn't let you go forward if he or she feels you can't carry it off
by yourself, right? I mean, if you're not able to.
If you're not competent to?
Right. Could you be speaking to competence at all?
No, I don't believe there's any suggestion that Mr. Williams was not competent. And, in fact, he was competent to stand trial, and so he was competent to waive his right to counsel. Knowing involuntary is a different issue, and there was no suggestion at that time she found that he was not acting in a knowing involuntary way.
That's what I'm really asking.
Yes.
No question about the voluntary.
Okay.
The knowingness. The knowing part of it.
She says to him, she's saying, well, this is an ill-advised move. This is a stupid thing you want to do. So what I'm going to do is let you cool down. And
so it's benevolent but in error. Is that your
exactly.
Point? I see.
And the two-week thing, I'm sorry I didn't make this clear, is my client asserted his right before the jury was chosen. And the judge said, I'm not granting it because I think it's mistaken. The trial commences. 2 weeks later, during trial, he renews his request.
Oh, I see. I missed
and that was the two-week thing.
Right.
Next, to call the judge's statement that, 2 weeks ago when I denied your request, it was for the purpose of delay, a factual finding, I think is wrong because it's not.
Why do you suppose she said that?
It was a conclusory statement, I think, to back up. Not only did she say at the time, I found it was for the purpose of delay, she also said, and by the way, I find it was for the purpose of obstructing the trial. And
well,
we're
supposed to disbelieve the trial judge because she makes a remark 2 weeks later?
No, absolutely not. But I think you need to evaluate the record based on what the trial judge says and does when she says and does it. And I think it's telling here that when my client renewed his request 2 weeks into trial, and she said, look, it's the middle of trial, I'm going to weigh everything, and I have to weigh the possible disruption of the proceedings because it's a mid-trial request. And my client asked her point blank, he said, well, why didn't you grant it when I made it before trial started? And she said, well, the reason I didn't pass on it then was because I said, let's get started and see how it goes, which is entirely consistent with what she said at the time she denied that request. That is, that she thought it was misguided. And the law is, it may well be misguided, but my client has the right to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to all counsel, and Ms. Schneider and Mr. Scherr, additional thanks for accepting the appointment and representing your defendants and ably doing it able fashion. Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.